Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by our weary traveler, Pete Sampson of The Athletic, and the forever onboarding media maven, John Bryce of USA Today. Guys, we have seen a full practice and a snippet of another yesterday. But before we get to that, there is news in Notre Dame recruiting land. The Irish signed a very fast running back from Texas, Lathan Wizenton, Waco Midway. And usually, Pete, when someone says very fast in Texas, I can stop right there. But that is something as an overview for, I know our subscribers were looking at the three-star designation from 24/7, four-star and top 300 elsewhere. Fast guy from Texas is always a good place to start.
Yeah, not Jeremiah Love, but like Jadarian Price was not this like all-world recruit coming out of Texas, and that turned out okay. And like, look, I think for the most part, I think fans have kind of adjusted to this. Like every commitment is temporary. If this doesn't develop, if he doesn't develop as a senior, then yeah, he's moving in a different direction. They're going to recruit other running backs, but this, my understanding is like this, he was kind of among their top five, but not their first choice at running back, but they liked him quite a bit. And he liked Notre Dame quite a bit. And you go from there, you know, maybe he's a little bit more Nolan James than Jadarian Price or Jeremiah Love, but I like Nolan James. I think the staff likes Nolan James too.
And again, we know it's going to be a two-back class, and we're continuing to see Notre Dame kind of recruit two different types of back. And this is the guy that can be the speedster that you can work out of the backfield on with some routes, and that you can try to get into space and do some different things in that regard. But his offer list tells you that there are a lot of teams around the country. His real offer list, you know,
his real offer list,
middle offers that he had, according to people here in town, were incredibly impressive. And that lets you know he's a very quality prospect. And we'll see what the future holds.
And Tom Loy mentioned that he did have visits set up that are now canceled. SMU, which sounds a lot different in the last 2 years than it used to. Florida, which I guess is true also. But Texas, Texas Tech, and Baylor. And you want to see Texas Tech nowadays in that offer list. And
well, especially you want to see Baylor, right? Like if you're from Waco and Baylor doesn't want you.
Baylor, yeah, yeah.
That would be a problem. But that's if, as long as you've got Texas Tech, Texas A&M, Baylor, some combination of those. You don't need all of them. You got to have the majority of them. Like we're in good shape if you're Notre Dame.
Practice number three Wednesday was one of those with four periods and no offense versus defense while we were involved. I think they went offense versus defense, Pete Sampson, in period five when we walked out, probably. But practice number one had quite a bit of offense defense. So yesterday really was more about the interviews, but we had a takeaway. We stood there and watched the defensive linemen. We have a question on this, so I don't want to walk all over it, but it just looks like different defensive linemen. And we'll throw it to John Bryce first, since you and I have a question on that, Pete Sampson. Notre Dame is recruiting the defensive line and what it has improved in just terms of stature, size. It was noticeable yesterday.
Yeah, and how long have we talked about that? And I saw some of those guys trickling in Tuesday because I was actually over at Pro Day. And as we get into the questions, I've got a lot more notes from the first few practices because I've been fortunate to have some people that were there. So some pretty good insight there. But yeah, we've talked for years on this podcast. People have gotten tired of hearing me talk about it. But Notre Dame has like stature to match with any program in the country right now on its defensive line, and not just out of one guy, but multiple guys. And I think that's significant. And that's especially with this linebacking core and this back seven, that can be, it's hard for Notre Dame to take another step defensively overall because of how good they've been, but that's the formula. And now we're starting to actually see it in person and see those bodies in person here in South Bend.
Man, it's a good looking group. I don't remember a defensive end group that looks better in 25 years covering the team.
I'm just going to go ahead and use the question that we were going to use then because it was number four, Bryce. We'll get rid of it. Irish in infamy. Pete's tweet yesterday was about the defensive line striking size. O'Malley's practice report focused on the line stature, noting myriad players that stood out in that regard. I don't have a question. I would just like you to inject this into my veins. So technically it wasn't a question anyway. But yeah, Pete, we walked away. We were standing down there. And you made the great point walking out that Rodney Dunham doesn't look any different than anybody else, but that was a compliment to everybody else, not cutting down Rodney Dunham.
Yeah, I mean, how often have we covered Notre Dame and they get a Rodney Dunham every 4 or 5 years, and he gets here and you're like, oh, game changer. this is going to reconfigure how we view Notre Dame's defensive end position. And now you're getting Roddy Dunn. You're like, I'll fit in.
Yeah.
Like that's,
you know, he just looks
that's like how it's supposed to be.
Like it is. That's how it's supposed
like
to be. Yes.
You get Joey O'Brien and Kari Adams, Aiden Pounce. You're like, oh, they'll fit in. Like in the past, it's like, oh man, they got a 3-year starter there immediately. It's just a totally different world on the defensive side of the ball in particular, in terms of the body types they have on the roster. And it's like, I was talking to somebody who's on the staff and he happened to play at Notre Dame. And we were just like, would they have recruited you again? And he's like, yeah, probably not. They just got dudes at a different level now.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I'm talking with people early specifically about the D-line, like Boubacar Traore has been a madman already. Ebenezer Iwatade has flashed yesterday, I was told, very much so. I was told that Teyon Gray yesterday actually in a drill showed like really incredible football intelligence to make a really savvy play on some simulated pressure calls. And so you're just, again, it's not just the stature, it's how many different skill sets Notre Dame now has to deploy. Francis Brew is already continuing to turn heads, as somebody told me. Like,
he does look different than the other tackles. He looks a little different.
Actually. Yeah, exactly. And as somebody told me, like, it's amazing what you can get out of a guy when a guy wants to play for you and wants to be there. And I think if that continues to be the case with Brew, from talking with people around college football, then that guy might end up being the best signing anywhere on the defense from this year's haul out of the portal.
We spoke with Brian Jean-Marie. He's a good interview. He has good stories. I'd like to have send people to Irish Illustrated to read his, I don't say this often, to read his Everything He Said transcript, because his Lou Holtz story about meeting Lou Holtz, I could not do it justice by trying to read it on a podcast right now. But I thought an interesting thing Jalen Sneed said was that, and he thinks Jean-Marie brought this to, I hadn't heard of it before. It's either Jean-Marie or Ash, but he thinks Jean-Marie kind of brought it to the offseason. Is they're kind of coupled up. In other words, you have a teammate, you have a partner, and you are supposed to be critical, critique, constructive criticism of your partner. And he's the Jaden Osbury. And I thought that is a fantastic idea for veteran players and young players, is because you have to be able to take that. We always say it's not happy camp. So Jalen Sneed and Jaden Osbury critiquing each other, I think that after every practice, I think that goes a long way too. Have you heard of that other places? I thought that was a great call. If it's Jean-Marie or Chris Ash, he wasn't sure.
I have not. Yeah. And it's interesting sort of talking to some of the players and coaches during spring practice about, you know, maybe the change in format and like how they're going about stuff. And like, I was more on the quarterback train last year, not to like hijack this, but it was interesting talking to Carr about how he doesn't like scripted practices. He likes to have to figure it out in real time. And like, that's a change that they've made in how they go about practicing offense, you know, not for Grubbs or Hebert, but for Carr specifically. And to sort of be able to like tweak and customize and, you know, sort of different approaches for different players with different experience levels, you know, whether it's be linebackers with Jean-Marie or quarterbacks with Carr, like that all has been a pretty interesting part of the early days of spring ball.
Yeah. I would say like the peer critiquing, I've heard it by position group, and sometimes coaches will turn the meeting room over and say like, okay, you guys are going to evaluate yourselves today, but this is a little bit more thorough and has a chance to be more resonant, I would think, if you're paired up over the entire duration of a spring camp.
You know, very quickly, I asked Gino Gadulli about Noah Grubbs, because we have a lot of time to talk about CJ Carr. And I said, you know, he clearly trusts his arm. I was kind of tongue in cheek because we were at the first practice. He's like, yeah, man, you have to. And he basically said, I don't want him to, I want him to trust his arm in practice. My message to him is, you got to find out what you can do and what you can't do. And the only way to find that out is probably pick sixes in practice, which is fine. This is what you need. And he said, if I'm taking away what Noah Grubbs is confident in, then he's just going to sit there and think. And he made a good point. Their next time they go to practice, they're working on third down defensive and offensive installation. So good luck to the first time quarterback coming in there if you don't trust your arm. So we have a question on quarterbacks also in segment two, but I think CJ Carr now just seems, I know he said it's totally different than last spring, how he feels is 100% different. You can look at CJ Carr.
Oh, yeah.
Everything is just completely. He is in complete control of this. And Gadooly was to the point where, I mean, he's a natural leader of all of them, where when he tells you something, he's not just some guy picking on you because he's the captain. He has the respect of the team, the respect of the group. And Bryce, you mentioned that that was kind of happening behind the scenes last year before that competition even started.
Yeah, no, it's something that is kind of innate to him. He has those characteristics. He's willing to put in the work, but there's no ego about it. It's just like, how do we get better? How do I get better to make everyone around me better? I think that's significant.
Yeah, I want to write about that this summer for a big feature, but I asked him about sort of the accountability, because Gadooly mentioned like Carr puts in enough time in the locker room to, when he comes at you or has to correct you, you're not like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
He's CJ Carr. I mean, it's like, and I'm Keith Hernandez voice, but like Carr is putting in so much work to get to know everybody that I think when I asked Carr about it, he's like, I'm not trying to be an asshole, but like, you know, it's like, you got to say something, I'll say it. And that's, I'm not saying that Riley Leonard didn't do that, or, you know, Sam Hartman hadn't done that in the past, but I just think with Carr, he has a different way of going about it. And I think his football IQ is so much higher than all these other quarterbacks that it's the equivalent of your offensive coordinator telling you something, because Carr is that deep into the playbook. And when Carr is talking about like, hey, you know, I'm watching Rams film and Matthew Stafford and I want to go under center more, I think for a lot of players, it'd be like, who the heck are you to like change the playbook? And again, I'm CJ Carr. He's at that level.
Yeah. Well, and again, like unlike those other two guys you just mentioned, or some other players, like this is year three for him at that position. Notre Dame hasn't had that since Ian Book. So,
and I don't think Ian Book like could do this. You know,
right.
I don't think his football IQ was where CJ Carr's is.
Yeah. Well, and also to that point, there's more naturally earned equity in what CJ Carr has done. And he's the guy, I've told the story before, but he and his mom went to Costco before preseason camp in 24 as a true freshman. And one of the guys at Costco told me he'd never seen so much food bought. And it was just because they were hosting a cookout for anybody who wanted to come in the middle of preseason camp or right at the onset of preseason camp. And they're at Costco buying $400 or $500 worth of burgers and dogs and meat and everything else. And CJ Carr had no prayer of ever playing in 2024, but he was already doing that.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard, I asked Emil Wagner about leadership at Pro Day for Carr, and Wagner's anecdote was CJ Carr's hurt freshman year and he's hanging out in the offensive line meeting room to watch film with us. And Wagner's like, what is this about? You know, that kind of stuff is just different. And Carr comes across as like, it's just natural to him. He's not like, he's being intentional about it, but not like overly intentional about it. And I think that's legit. I think that's very authentic. Like, I think it's just who Carr is.
Yeah. It's not at all scripted or performative. It's inherent.
So maybe this was a little bit more like when we asked Riley Leonard, were you like CJ? Does he remind you? Does he remind of you as a freshman? He goes, no, not at all. Not at all. I was nothing like CJ Carr as a freshman. Maybe he meant it every way as a quarterback and a leader. Just shout out to Riley, because he is still the all-time greatest student athlete to talk to for genuine responses. He was just cracking up at the thought that CJ Carr could be anything like his new hero, CJ Carr, who was 4 years younger than him.
The only thing I wanted to add here is, like, if Pete is Keith Hernandez, are you Mookie or am I? And which one is Lenny Dykstra?
And we had a little Seinfeld on today's text chain actually as well. So speaking of Pro Day, you guys were in attendance. I was running the board for all the important updates that were not shown on the Peacock broadcast. Pro Day, some observations, I guess. Will Pauling had himself a day. That worked out well. And as somebody did say in our the chain became kind of funny because we were joking and we couldn't see anything on the screen, any of the workouts while we were talking. Will Pauling did not miss many workouts recently. When you see that, speaking of physiques, that guy looked like he is ready to play.
How was he ever at Wisconsin as an offensive skill player?
Yeah. Well, he was there
on the gym and running under a sub, running sub 4.4.
Because of Mike Brown. That's why. 4.37, I think, was his best time on the 40. And you could hear that was the loudest. Not that there's always a ton of cheering at a pro day, but I think Pete would acknowledge, like, the cheers for the Pauling 40 did reverberate through the IAC. Like, it was a loud standing ovation above us there. We were field level, and all the family and special guests were on the second level looking down. But he looked great. I thought Eli Raridan had a really good day. Malachi Fields and Jadarian Price didn't do a ton, but they were very clean and crisp in their route running. Jake Tofelsky had a 41-inch vertical leap.
Yeah, I saw Tofelsky jump 41 inches. That's
41 inches, crazy town. I think he had 15 reps at 225 on the bench. Somebody texted me saying, wouldn't be surprised to see him get a shot like a Max Hurlman, who's been with the Steelers for a couple of years because of that. So, yeah. And then Aaron Glenn was there for the Jets. Jeremiah Love revealing that he met with them in person before Pro Day ever started on Tuesday morning. I think there were multiple other GMs there. I didn't personally see them. I was told Gutekunst was there from the Packers and maybe Mickey Loomis and company there from the Saints. We know the Saints' interest is real because the Saints sent their in-house reporter up to Pro Day on Tuesday.
Yeah, so I would be a little leery of Aaron Glenn watching me if I was CJ Carr.
That's a tough one. Yeah, see that, and people are wondering, I think Drew Mentok cleared this up on our Irish Illustrated Instant Analysis podcast. In the old days, that would count. CJ Carr throwing would be a practice.
Yeah,
he cleared up with CJ Carr. That's not a thing anymore. That is one of the weirder rules I think I can think of. And ChatGPT will betray you and tell you that it's still a problem, but it's not. So CJ Carr throwing, great choice. The broadcast did. By the way, I'm making fun of the broadcast because I just bit bitter that I wasn't at the pro day seeing things. But Ian Book did it. I don't know if I told you guys this. Ian Book did a great job on that broadcast.
Really?
I was really impressed, actually. He's with Tony Simeone, and he dropped in great stories about training, about what pro day's like, about a lot of the good stuff about what they ask you in interviews as a quarterback. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. The broadcast level was actually really good. It's just I wanted to see what was happening on the field at the time too. Would have been, you know, if you're a good color analyst like Ian Book was, I'd like to see what he was talking about on the field as well.
I mean, that's what makes a good former player analyst, is like when you can give us those anecdotes of like, what is it really like? And that's like, I think it's harder to do than people realize based on how few people do it well.
You guys did see there was a 419 run at that pro day though, right?
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
Katie Lonergan's dog sprinted a 419, which is a
Archie?
That was the day before. That was not at pro day. That was at canine pro day.
That would have been illegal, actually, right? If it was a pro day. NCAA would have had a violation if it was at pro day. If
along with the rest of the support staff.
It would have been Eli, yes, support staff too.
Eli, JB, yeah, I'm sorry.
No JB, no 40 for you if you were there early?
Oh, hell no. No.
We have a fair amount of questions where we could have had a basketball podcast, except people would stop listening. So we're not going to have one of those. We are going to discuss what is going on with the Notre Dame basketball program. The three players to enter the portal now, if you're a normal quality basketball program, you would replace with two freshmen and another portal player. That is not the case for Notre Dame. Sir Muhammad Ryder Frost, who we did like earlier in the season, he had some defensive issues, and Garrett Sundra in the portal. If that was going to be it, Notre Dame fans would be happy for next year. That would be a win, but that does not look like that is going to be it, at least not per Tom Noe of the South Bend Tribune.
No, Ed, I don't know. He is better versed in all of this than we are, but I can't speak with some authority that Jalen Harrelson is out of here. I can't speak with much certainty about Marcus Burton or Cole Serta, but
returned recently though, so I can speak with more certainty on than it was.
Just the Harrelson stuff. I get it, and it's less that he's leaving and more that you wasted him while he was here. That's really frustrating. So, yeah, it's. This unfortunately it's going to get worse before it gets better situation for Notre Dame basketball. And it's already pretty bad.
Yeah. And like, exactly. Like you're talking about, it's going to get worse. And all we've seen is a house of bricks for 3 years with no identity and no consistency. And Noy did a good job on, I guess it was two nights ago. Yeah. So later Tuesday night, nailing down that Shrewsbury was out at Butler. But I spoke with multiple people in the Butler athletics department, and to act like there was never anything to that, I would just very staunchly disagree with that. And I don't think it's any accident that that story came out Tuesday night. Great reporting by Tom Noy. You guys know he's a close friend. Great reporting by Tom Noy, but I don't think it's any accident that Tuesday night it comes out with Micah defiantly saying, or someone defiantly saying in the program, Micah wants to get this fixed. There's a responsibility to get Notre Dame basketball back. At the same time, I was getting texts that NORAD was going to be the guy that Butler had completed his search. Yep. So I don't think the timing of that was coincidental whatsoever.
I don't want to make this into a bit, but I'm serious. I want you guys to interview me like I'm Marcus Burton, asking me a reason to come back. And this is why I feel it's impossible at this point. If you're Pat Garrity and Micah Shrewsbury, I can refute anything you're saying. And I want to explain this to people that would listen.
Yeah, what would it be? Like, we're going to pay you $3 million and we're going to have a NIL budget of 12 to 15. Like, give us a chance to build around you.
I can get that at Houston. I can get that at North Carolina. I can get that at Florida, and I can go to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight.
Marcus, other than this being your hometown, do you feel like you've been developed in such a way that compels you to want to return to South Bend for another year?
I think I'm one of the best players in the country, but we've won 41 games in my three seasons here. I don't think he'd add this part, but that's four more than Ryan Hoover won in his first three seasons at Notre Dame, and is a much different recruiting class. I think I could develop somewhere else much better. And the academic side, everybody that leaves Notre Dame comes back and graduates and gets a degree from Notre Dame if they want to when they're juniors. They can come back for 1 year and get a degree. It's you can't even say you're close to a degree. He can say, I see Drew Pine walking around here other years. He's been to four colleges. He has a Notre Dame degree. Like, you can get he's 3 years in. He can get a degree the year after he retires from basketball.
And did you know that I just learned that this week from the NCAA, that in addition to having to honor all scholarships for 4 years now, that then they have to give you 10 years also then on top of that to complete your degree.
10 years.
And to honor that whatever scholarship, whether it's 2 years or 3 years that you've already banked. If you've got
he's two, already banked three.
You've got 10. Yeah, he's got 10 years whenever it's all over to do that one final year per the NCAA this week. I retweeted it because the NCAA clapped at Jemele Hill and I was laughing so hard that even in the car, I was like, retweet, repost, whatever.
I mean, that is a great thing for the student athlete and for humans, but it's really bad for Notre Dame when they want people to stay and get the Notre Dame degree. Yeah. I'll come back and get it.
Yeah, like, this is probably too much basketball talk, but like, what level do you think Burton is a player? Like, in terms of his next program, are we talking like Kansas, Duke?
I think he starts everywhere and would play with great players around him. And if it's a really defensive minded program, you would just have a bench for helping out in that way. I think he can start almost anywhere.
I think, I don't know about Duke. I'm not there with him.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough.
I think he's a second team all ACC or all Big 12 guard at a Louisville or a Houston or one of those spots. He could absolutely play at Kansas, but
at Duke and Kentucky shop different aisles to go.
Yeah,
most places he could go play.
Look what Acuff Jr. is doing at Arkansas. Darren Peterson did at Kansas when he was actually on the floor this year. Like, he's not in that class, but he is an all conference college player. Whether that's first team, second team, or third team depends on his supporting cast and the conference, in my opinion. But he's Jacoby Gillespie-esque for Tennessee, who was their star last weekend with Nate Aument banged up in the NCAA tournament. And Jacoby Gillespie, I think, got $3 million last year to leave Maryland and go to Tennessee.
All right, that's going to be a hard recruiting pitch if you're looking to get $3 million for a one-year player, Marcus Burton. I'm going to remember, Jack Freeman, when we talk basketball next time, not to end segment one with it, because it does kind of end segment one on a down note. But with that, we will be back with segment two, more football talk on Burning Up the Boards. We are back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. I got so excited talking about Notre Dame's prospects in the basketball portal. We skipped over some notes from from John Bryce, Pete Sampson. Why don't you guys talk a little bit more about what you've heard from the practices as well, because, you know, admittedly, we saw a snippet, Pete, of the four practice segment, or the four segment practice. Saw a lot more the first time, obviously.
Yeah, I missed that on my tour of Thailand and Malaysia. But I would say, like, the stuff that I heard going into spring has held up. And it was young offensive linemen have really impressed. Mylon Graham is outstanding. Love the freshman defensive ends. And Kadon Finley was somebody I heard about going into spring. I'm not sure I've heard as much about him during spring. But the other ones have really held up quite well. And I think that Mylon Graham in particular is, I mean, Notre Dame's point of view is like Quincy Porter might have been the better fit for Notre Dame. And that was even Ohio State's opinion on it. But Mylon Graham is a better player. And they're seeing that so far with Mylon Graham. So he's been outstanding. I was asking around a little bit more about like the receiver rotation, about like, okay, what is it going to be? I don't want to get into T. Row 1989's question here, but like Cam Williams was not a name that I had really heard. It was more like, you know, Elijah Burris was a name that popped up. It was, if Greathouse doesn't click back into gear, we feel pretty good about it. So, you know, Faison, Graham, Burris, maybe Cam Williams on the outside, Micah Gilbert, definitely. So I think they feel pretty good about their receiver position, the depth of it, but they also feel like they got a killer at the top in Graham. And I think Faison is kind of close to that level too.
I want to, JB, before you jump in, I want to point out for people that aren't aware, Quincy Porter's not practicing. So Pete right. meant Mylon Graham has looked great as expected. Not that he looks better than Quincy Porter yet. Porter has not practiced.
Oh, no. I actually do. I mean that in the sense of Ohio State was like, if we were going to lose one player,
we'll lose
Quincy Porter before Mylon Graham.
Right.
Yeah, and they liked Porter. They borderline loved Graham.
Yeah, a couple of quick overarching notes before then getting into that. Number one, like it's been reported out there that Texas AD Chris Del Conte has acknowledged some uncertainty about that future Notre Dame Texas home and home series that's towards the end of this decade. I'm told there's continued trepidation about the future of that series, so I would note that. I think some of you guys heard as well that, and we've already heard Marcus talking about kind of everyone has to absorb the pain, wear the pain, understand the suffering of what happened at the end of last season. It's transferring over to the practice field already. There were multiple scuffles yesterday, multiple scuffles already in practice. Some of the central figures in those, Adon Shuler, Flanagan, Anthony Knapp. Those are the three that I heard.
Cooper Flanagan.
Yes, Jake. Cooper Flanagan. Correct. Cooper Flanagan,
Anthony Knapp,
Adon Shuler. Those are the ones I heard. I've been told that Faison has had an electric spring so far. Obviously, it's very early, but, quote, he is very much the guy. Micah Gilbert has had a nice spring. I've heard the same on Cam Williams, that he is – this is the most he's looked like a college player with a chance to contribute of his entire time, which is what you would expect, but it's still important to be seeing that now. Knapp has been really impressive at guard. Gerby Lambert looks great. Let's see some other notes here. Yeah, the same thing with you on Mylon Graham. Quote, he is an unbelievable mover. And I think that's kind of what Pete is alluding to. Finley had a really, really nice day yesterday. And then, yeah, Boubacar, of course, is doing some really good stuff. But then again, so is Francis Bruwu. And even Armel Mukum flashed a little bit. I'm not trying to name everybody here. I'm just trying to supply as much insight as possible. I will not talk about that defensive lineman numbered in the
You know, I want to get back to the Traore just for one comment. The best thing about Traore is he wouldn't be here if he didn't get hurt. He'd be in the NFL right now. And he's going to show that he would be in the NFL right now in the fall. I think Boubacar Traore never got hurt. He could have bounced after last year because he's got that talent. And now he'll help his draft stock that he did play next year at a high level.
I think real quickly, the last thing I'll add is I think the first scrap yesterday prompted both sidelines to be out in the middle of the field there at Notre Dame in the practice complex area. So like it was, the intensity was at an 11 yesterday for sure.
All I need is a tunnel, Pete Sampson. You know that. I like my football fights. The first two questions were actually on Mylon Graham and Cam Williams. So I'll quickly, I want to edit it down a little bit. Pete from 2010 ND, do you have a comparison for Mylon Graham yet? The Chris Brouts, the athleticism, the twitch. Doesn't have to be a Notre Dame guy, but obviously it's better for the.
I have not heard one yet. And I don't want to throw one out that people are, you in particular, Tim O'Malley, are like, oh my God. So I'm going to hold off on a Mylon Graham comparison until I see it myself.
You know what he does do? And it's, he's a different player, but he does something that you're going to laugh, Pete, when I tell you this, but he goes full speed through the ball. Like he's at full speed when he catches it. Mm-hmm. And that's our old favorite guy.
Yeah.
Kevin Steffers.
He was, that would be a great player comp. If that happens,
he was a dog through the ball, man. And that's what Mylon Graham kind of looks like to me. The next question was from T-Row 1989 that Pete referenced. Early reports on Cam Williams sound promising. Is there a chance he could see him emerge as a boundary option? I want to point out he says option. Or is that, as JB would put it, crazy town banana land?
sorry. Go ahead, Pete.
I would say it would be a surprise to me. I don't think it's banana land.
Last year, Banana Land, right?
I think Cam Williams as like a rotational player would be a successful season for him.
Yeah, that's how I was going to put it. So
if he has a KK Smith season, that would be really a couple of touchdowns. You know, you hope the touchdowns against a team where you're like early in the year. If you see Cam Williams score in the third quarter against Michigan State, that's a career highlight. He could score again against BYU, and you've had a great Cam Williams season.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. We're talking half dozen catches for 120 yards or something.
Yeah. And a touchdown against BYU, of course, Pete Sampson. You know that. That's an important one. All right. Question number three from CMU Pens fan. How much do you think having the QB spot not a battle in 26 like it was in 25 improves and will improve the way spring and fall practices go for the Irish?
You can read about this at The Athletic. Yeah, I spent a lot of time talking to CJ Carr and Gino Guiduli about this yesterday, and the answer is a lot. You know, Carr talked about, one, there's the mental part of it where he's not worried about losing his job from every mistake that he makes. I also think he has reached sort of back to this quarterback enlightenment stage of playing the position where he's just sort of seeing how the defense and the offense fit together and then, you know, adjusting accordingly. He views practice as a time to make mistakes, to push the offense to its breaking point. That's not something you can do unless you have already sort of achieved mastery. And I think he's still got a lot to prove. You know, I asked Guiduli about this yesterday, like how teams defend Carr this year is going to be totally different than what he saw last year. I think he had 37 dropbacks total against cover two last year. Like that's nothing. And I would think that'd be the predominant coverage he would see this year.
Yeah.
And he did not take shots against cover two. He had a high completion percentage, I think 77%, but only, I think, 6 air yards per target, where every other scheme he played against, he was over 10 yards air yards per target. So it's a totally different way to play football. I think he'll do just fine with it, but I think having no competition and being able to like really get detailed and nerd out on some of this stuff is going to be very beneficial for Notre Dame and for CJ Carr.
Yeah. And I would just add, I've been answering this question for a number of years, because this is what I've been waiting for Notre Dame to see, to have a homegrown incumbent quarterback and to have retained all the key staff people, most notably Dimbrock, Guiduli, and Lauren Lando for that matter. So I think this spring camp for CJ Carr is far more preseason camp like in a lot of ways. Like he prepares in such a way that I think he's approaching this spring camp like he's preparing for a game every day.
I'm going to throw this one to JB. It's from Statman72. USA Today reported on March 12th that many schools are negotiating contracts with their apparel suppliers to include money earmarked for NIL, allowing schools to legally facilitate endorsement deals for athletes without exceeding revenue share limits. Do you have any insight into what ND is doing in this regard, Bryce?
Yeah, and ND has done this for a few years, even beyond football. Corbin Albert had an Under Armour soccer apparel deal when she was still starring for Notre Dame women's soccer. So also would look at, it's no accident that Joy O'Brien became an Under Armour spokesman before he ever got to Notre Dame. So when you ask what are some, he was part of that UA Next Generation or however they marketed and branded it. So that's the key. You can do it. I mean, Jeremiah Love a year ago, might have made a couple of million dollars from Notre Dame. He made a couple million more from New Balance. Again, not an accident, and a real NIL program. So that's the way that's being handled, as it's been explained to me.
Yeah, it's, I remember going to the Under Armour here and seeing, I mean, this is a while, like pictures of Lorenzo Styles. You know, this, that's been going on for a while. I think I realize Under Armour takes a lot of flack from the Notre Dame fan base, but essentially being their only client in the college space, this is one of the benefits. Like, they're going to partner with you and work with you on it. Like, do you think Texas is going to call Nike and do the same thing when Alabama and USC are like, wait a minute, what about us?
Yeah. And I would note, like, Tennessee, it was controversial, and Auburn for that matter. Auburn went to Nike, Tennessee left Nike to go to Adidas. Tennessee very publicly said a huge reason, and part of the terms of its new deal with Adidas, was because Adidas was separately funneling into NIL for Tennessee athletes and prospective Tennessee athletes. So Faison Brandon is arriving at Tennessee, or arrived at Tennessee already, as an Adidas spokesperson, or with an Adidas deal already in the works. So again, that does not come from the revenue share money, which just allows you to pay the entirety of your roster even more, but also still have those top end players have a chance to make what is now star money in college football. And the stars in college football have superseded $2 million, $3 million, and it's basketball is, there were some guys this year that I was told, some of the star freshmen, that made between $5 and $6 million.
Pete, I was going to make fun of you with the Lorenzo Styles comparison earlier in the podcast, but you brought his name up there. So very well done.
Question number 7 from Chris Koziak. When you guys go into a practice / scrimmage, do you have a plan as to what you're going to look for that day? Or do you let the practice tell you what you're looking for that day? T.O., you're always the bully moderator. I will bully you and make you start.
For 4 period practices, you got to let it go where it takes you, because you don't know what you might have a chance to see. I did not necessarily plan on watching the defensive line, but they kind of drew us down there, Pete Sampson. When you go into a scrimmage, it's good to have a plan, because I have a plan to watch the lines hitting each other and the running backs pass protecting and the linebackers covering the running backs, because when we see any snippet of practice that does not involve live 11-on-11, you always are drawn to the corners and receivers, quarterback. So any chance I get to see the hitting, the lines, that's where I go to for scrimmage, because it's a dearth of it otherwise. You see, even when we don't see anything from practice in August, you'll still see one-on-ones once in a while at wide receiver and corner. So I like to see anything that involves linemen actually playing football on both sides of it, because that's when you get a little bit more of a feel for things.
Yeah, if it's a full open practice, I usually like to do sort of a running diary of it to get as much sort of stream of consciousness of thought and analysis into it. If it's a short practice, I try to get a couple anecdotes for future stories about, like, hey, I saw CJ Carr do this, or I saw Marcus Freeman interact with somebody this way. You know, and then we're taking roll. Who's here, who's not? How did the offensive line come out? If the defense comes out in sort of that pursuit drill, how'd they come out? First team, second team, third team. But yeah, that's, you're trying to maximize the opportunities, because there aren't a whole lot of them.
Brian Kelly's gift to reporters, guys, was the tempo drill, where he would send out first team, second team, third team. Doesn't happen as much anymore. Need to be in there the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I sort of jokingly harken back to what the late, great Monty Kiffin said like 17 years ago when I was talking to him at a practice, and he said it again, like, if you see a little, you'll see a lot. If you see a lot, you're not seeing anything. So once you get through the opening portion, as you referenced, T.O., if you're getting to watch a whole practice or a scrimmage, be mindful of the details. Have something you know you want to study that day, whether it's how the offensive line works together, not just how they come out and who is working together. How do they work together?
Remember, unwittingly, I made the comment I was going to watch Nolan James in the first practice. Then I realized you're not allowed to tackle in those first couple practices. So me watching Nolan James didn't matter quite as much as if, but then I'll watch him when I get to see a scrimmage later on in this.
That's right. No contact.
None of that. Next question from Frank and Kyle. And I've been holding this one for you, JB. How do the true walk-ons work with the NIL profit sharing? I remember a few years ago when Notre Dame's NIL was in its infancy that Scott Senja, a former walk-on kicker, friend of my family, they were trying to get a collective together, but I think that obviously has gone by the wayside. That collective has gone by the wayside because the NIL exploded.
Yeah, Wapoo Nation is obviously quite famous around the Notre Dame program. And I think, like you said early on, there was some NIL stuff for walk-ons. It's different with every program. It's sometimes it's even different with every player. They're not guaranteed any revenue share. Schools who opt in for full participation still have the discretion to distribute those funds how they see fit. The big thing that I'm told is that some schools are now more capable of providing like the NCAA's Alston money, the full cost of attendance money that maybe walk-ons previously weren't getting. In some places, that's an extra $4,000 to $6,000 a year, maybe even closer to $4,000 a semester. So that's the way, but they're not guaranteed NIL. They're not guaranteed rev share. And a lot of times those guys are just happy to be a part of the team. And at least the NCAA did away several years ago. And again, the NCAA is comprised of its member institutions. So it was really the member institutions holding things back. But at least now they can give the walk-ons full snacks and let them eat at training table and all the stuff that they really weren't allowed to do like within the last decade. It's the dumbest. I almost dropped some words there, but dumb.
It's remarkable, really, that would never be that. Yeah. The inefficiencies of the NCAA, I guess, we could have a podcast probably.
I would see this was cool. This is like one of those team things that you don't, unless you see it, you don't really think about it or know it. I would see dudes fill up to-go plates that were scholarship players and take them outside to the walk-ons. Now, how awesome is that? So those guys were going home with hella meals that they never otherwise could get.
Our final question, unless JB has to bounce, because this has been saved for you, JB. And Pete, you can opine on Major League Baseball. You said you want to talk about Trammell and Whitaker, right, for a double play combination?
Yeah, that's I grew up in Michigan in the 80s, right. Detroit Tigers. Give me some Sparky Anderson and Chet Lemon and Frank Tanana.
There you go. See, we found out Drew Mantok's a Royals fan. Pete Sampson knows the old school Tigers. JB, from Dr. Parnell 42, a frequent subscriber and a frequent contributor. Opening day of Major League Baseball is here, and I was hoping JB would give us his feelings on his beloved Atlanta Braves' chances this season. He then asked for a rant. I'm not sure you're ready for a rant because nothing's gone wrong yet.
No, it has. Have you not seen the injuries? They've sat on their ass. Juriskin Profar is banned for the year. You want a rant? I'll give you a rant. The Braves also just announced this week they're going to sell game-used bases like in their clubhouse store during the game, and they're going to light a green light when the damn new bases. The only people touching those bases are going to be opposing base runners because their pitching rotation is trash, and they should have not hired Walt Weiss. Go Braves. Chop on forever. Love you guys.
All right. Well, that, I'm glad we saved that one for JV. Wow. I'm not going to ask you to follow that.
No, I just wonder what's going on with Maddox, Avery, and Tom Glavine. If they're still pitching there.
All right. The additional part of that question was we did a great job with upsets last week. Drew Mentok pulling off the high point call. We had Santa Clara as a possibility. Pete Sampson, do you have one for the Sweet 16? Give me the whole weekend.
Man, the whole weekend. This is the lack of intrigue. Opening weekend should set up quite nicely for this weekend, right? I could see Arkansas, Arizona. That's the one that kind of jumps out to me. I think people know that I grew up in Michigan, certain basketball programs. So I know Connecticut is favored by 1.5, but I think that could be an awesome game.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't really call that an upset, but I think that the Arkansas is sneaky good. I think Arizona is really good too, but if Arkansas knocked out Arizona, that wouldn't blow me away, but that would definitely be an upset.
I would have had a tough time with this, except I'm in that same survivor pool where you have to pick a winner every day, not every round, every day. And then you eventually run out of teams and you hope to have two going in the final or one going in the final game, which did not work for me last year. I never lost last year, Pete Sampson, but I had nobody in the championship game. So you can't win either way. Mine is because of that. My upset is probably St. John's because I'm afraid to pick Duke. Yep. So that would be my upset pick. I'm afraid to use Duke right now. And I don't think I'm going to use Duke later on if they're facing Houston either. So I guess my upset pick is St. John's because I just don't want to pull the trigger on Duke. And I never would have said that back when they played Notre Dame in that eighth grade varsity scrimmage.
Yeah, it should be a good weekend of hoops. I'm looking forward to it.
It occurred to me we could have an entire podcast in May or actually end of April when spring practice is still on our minds where Priester, Pete, and I, Drew, JB, we could have one where it is the memory. The question should be about all spring practices and August camps, like the things you remember from the practices. And it's not all the negative, funny things where we'll throw things out there like the net. But I just remember watching Michael Floyd practice and thinking, holy cow, that guy. Guys like that that are all out, or guys that are not all out. Like Golden Tate, everybody knows I believe Golden Tate was better than Michael Floyd, but Golden Tate practiced at 1% efficiency compared to Michael Floyd. And I will always take away. I always kind of remember that.
How often do the Kevin Austin practice come up in conversation? Like, you know, you have those one hit wonder practice. Did I ever tell you the Chris Fink story? Like when he told me that he sort of credited us for getting him on scholarship.
Yes.
Because whenever there was an open practice, he like destroyed people. And then when we weren't there, he was just okay.
Remember, he was in the drill, the one-on-one drill. You have to make a one-on-one tackle live against Chris Fink, and no one ever breathed on him the entire time. As the coaches would always point out, there's 10 other guys on the football field when this is really happening, so Chris Fink can't just do that. But he was the best ever at that drill. And hopefully we were one of the better podcasts for you to listen to this week. We'll be back on Monday, March 30th. Yes, we will. We'll have interviews tomorrow. We will not see any more football until next week. So until Monday, for John Bryce of USA Today, Pete Sampson of The Athletic, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.